And now let me introduce you to our guests for this first part of our program. We are joined by Bryce Covert, who is editor of the Roosevelt Institute's New Deal 2.0 blog. She writes regularly about women and the economy for The Nation magazine. And Lenny McAllister, Republican strategist and former congressional candidate. You can see his work at LennyMcAllister.com. And Bryce and Lenny, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thanks so much.
Lenny, you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, Lenny. How are you?
Doing pretty well.
Good, good. So let's begin. We're seeing these meetings take place in Washington, D.C. between President Barack Obama and the House Republican leadership that doesn't seem to be moving. And we have this debt ceiling that we're facing here on October 17th, which is where it seems to have shifted from the Affordable Health Care Act debate between the 40 Tea Party Republicans leading their caucus and members in the House. And Bryce, I'd like to start with you. I mean, one of the things I was interesting to see was kind of the rhetoric that President Barack Obama is using in this instance. When he says things like, I'm happy to have negotiations, but we can't do it with a gun held to the head of the American people, almost as if using the kind of the rhetoric of terrorism in some ways, addressing to what's happening to this country. What's your take on all that?
I think he's using the rhetoric of hostage taking. We've seen a lot of that rhetoric from him, from Harry Reid in the Senate. And I think it's pretty valid because what the Republicans have basically done in the House is to issue a set of demands leading up to the need to extend funding and keep the government open, which they didn't do. They didn't come to an agreement. So we've had a shutdown government for about 2 weeks now. And also to raise the debt ceiling, a deadline that is quickly approaching. And you know, the fallout from shutting down the government and from failing to raise the debt ceiling, which means that we can't meet our obligations and pay the things that we owe, are pretty disastrous. They have very different impacts, but they're pretty negative. And so talking about not wanting to negotiate with this gun held to his head is basically saying, look, I'll talk to you, but I don't want to do it under these extreme circumstances. First, we have to take care of opening the government and making sure that we don't default on our debt, and then let's have a conversation.
Yes, Lenny McAllister, let's pretend for a moment you actually won your congressional race. What would you be doing if you were in the halls of Congress right now?
I would be negotiating with the Democrats. I think we wouldn't have gotten to this point of time. We would have been able to avoid some of this rhetoric, some of this tone. The whole purpose of me running for Congress was running on the campaign of and the slogan of one big team. And that's what we need to really start seeing in Washington moving forward. And that hasn't happened. People are starting to move in that direction, but that's after we've shut the government down, and that's as we're less than 1 week away from hitting the debt ceiling. If I were in Congress, although I would be a freshman congressman, I would be somebody that would be working with the Democrats and saying there are ways out to allow both sides to go back to our respective parties and say we got something out of this and we're moving in the right direction. Because what we're forgetting about is that we need to get the American people back to work. We need to have an economic environment where those that have been involved in the long-term unemployment numbers can finally get back to work. That's how we turn our country around. That's how you alleviate a lot of the health care problems that we're having right now. The reform, it's great to reform the system, but if people have money in their pockets, they can take care of a lot of these problems themselves. So I would be focusing on how do we get the results we need so that the environment is perfect to get people back to work. And the number one thing for that, Mark, would be to get an actual budget that lasts for 12 months, not these 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 90-day type of continuing resolution type of scenarios that we continue to see that does not provide the stability to allow employers to feel comfortable enough to start hiring again.
And Bryce, you wrote a really interesting piece in The Nation, a blog in The Nation, about what the five things you think that progressives should be pushing in the halls of Congress. But I wonder which we can talk about as well. But I wonder what you think should be the response from the progressive end of the spectrum. Some people look at it and go, we had somebody on the show the other week saying that it'd be nice to see progressives stand up like some of the Tea Party. Is that the answer? I mean, what do you think should be the response?
Well, look, I understand why Democrats have been basically just trying to pass clean bills for both opening the government and raising the debt ceiling. As I said before, failing to do either is disastrous, and this is irresponsible politics to be playing around with both of these. That said, if this is a negotiation, to come in with zero demands when Republicans had a huge list of demands with a bunch of pet projects like funding the Keystone XL pipeline, privatizing Medicaid, defunding Planned Parenthood, to come in and say our only demand is that we'll accept sequestration and just pass a clean bill means that you've basically conceded all the turf. And beyond that, some of the things I list in my article is there are lots of things that progressives could be pushing that would actually help boost the economy. You know, I agree that right now it is crazy to shut down the government and talk about defaulting on our debt at a time when there is very high unemployment still, when the economy is very sluggish, going through a very slow recovery. Right now, we're probably hurting that recovery with a shutdown government. Democrats can be putting forward some things that could actually give the economy a boost that are also sort of part of their larger agenda.
And I think that, in some ways, is what is not taking place, is that kind of conversation and the real kind of there is an ideological war in America right now over what America should be. I think most people in America are probably very frustrated over how it's being fought at the moment, especially Lenny, on the Republican side of the aisle.
I would agree with that, and it kind of goes back to your first question. You know, what would I be doing if I were in Congress? We need more statesmen and people that take a high-level view as to where we need to get to as a nation in the 21st century. And I know that from an ideological standpoint, both on the left and on the right, we have these visions of what we think America should be, but everybody's trying to get there all at once. And one of the problems that the Tea Party element within the Republican Party has had is that they haven't recognized what a win is. When the president gives you concessions after the 2010 midterms and gives you the Bush-era tax cut extension for two more years, that's when you negotiate on Obamacare. That's when you negotiate on spending. You don't wait until the debt limit crisis of the fall of 2011 to do that. That's how you lose your credit rating, which is what we did as a nation that fall. You don't wait until going into 2013 to start negotiating over revenues. You do that in 2011 when the president's looking to get reelected. You do that after he wins reelection. And then even when you get concessions from this president, you continue to push too hard, you end up losing some of what you gained during those negotiations, which Republicans did going into January 1st, 2013. There's a lesson to be learned there. You have to be stately enough to understand what a win is. You have to be able to piece wins together in order to create the America that not only is more like what you're looking for from a philosophical standpoint, but you also have to make sure that that political philosophy provides successful opportunities for the diversity of America. And again, too often than not, we sit in these philosophical silos, and as long as it works for our gerrymandered district, we're okay. We need people to think outside of their district and start thinking of this nation with the borders that we have, the people that we have, the diversity that we have, and the great and complex problems that we're facing right now.
Now, I know, Bryce, I was thinking about what Lenny just said, and the many people in your magazine that have written about these gerrymandered districts and the effect they're having on politics, and the kind of and with some of the stuff that could happen in the Supreme Court coming up, especially the McCutcheon case when it has to do with money and politics. I mean, this is how deep do you think this crisis is, Bryce, in terms of what we're facing in the future? I mean, is this something that we saw this happen in the 1990s? And for you and your analysis, how different is that? And as I just said a moment ago, how deep do you think this crisis is?
Well, I want to go off of something that Lenny is saying,
which is the
inability to understand a win and to negotiate in a successful way. I think what we're seeing right now is that the Republicans, particularly the Tea Party Republicans, who have sort of brought us to this brink, I don't think they even know what they want. They went in saying they wanted to defund Obamacare. That's sort of not even part of the conversation right now. You see a lot of them sort of saying, we have to get something. We're not quite sure what it is. And that's a scary statement because you have brought us to the place where our government is shut down, we're at risk of defaulting on our debt. you're holding these things hostage and you don't even know what you want in exchange for the hostage. I think that, you know, they need to recognize the Democrats have made concessions. We've done a lot of deficit reduction and three quarters of it has been in spending cuts. As I said before, Democrats have even accepted sequestration and called that a clean bill to continue funding the government at sequestration levels to get it back open. They need to take a look at these things and say, okay, we've made progress. Maybe if we're gonna demand more, we have to think about what do we give up? What do we think is a smart thing on the other side that we can, you know, get behind? I think that they are just looking to oppose Democrats and in particular President Obama without understanding what they want to accomplish with that.
Mark, I don't know if that's completely true. I understand where she's going with this, but the conservative movement knows what they want. They are trying to get there. It would be like me going from Pittsburgh to New York by saying if I walk three blocks and make a right, I'm going to be standing in Manhattan. You have to get into a vehicle. You have to go down particular roads. You're going to have to go on some toll roads. You have a process to go through, and that's what they're ignoring. So if you want to repeal Obamacare, and you can't do it by winning the 2012 elections, that didn't happen, how do you make sure that we're in a better fiscal place and bring about better health care reform? Health care reform that you weren't involved in as minority Republicans in 2009 and 2010. You have to do it step by step rather than saying it's all or nothing. And unfortunately, we saw the all or nothing approach by the Democrats when they had a supermajority in 2009, and now the Republicans that have some power on Capitol Hill, they're taking an all or nothing approach just in a different way, which is either you're going to give us what we want or we're going to shut down the government and then we'll do it that way. And again, that's not being stately. That's not being a leader in America during the types of problems that we're facing, because in the process, you're going to continue to see that people are dropping out of the workforce, that people are staying unemployed for a longer period of time, that employers that do have employees are going to shed labor hours, all of these things we've been seeing. This type of fight, we have to methodically get to where we want to get to. You can still change Obamacare, but instead of changing it over the course of a couple of months or a couple of weeks, it might take a couple of years. But that might be okay. There are certain things that are in this bill that still make sense. Pre-existing conditions still make sense. Kids that are going to be staying home longer with their parents, still being on their health care insurance, still makes sense. Changing what you need to change, and we've already seen the evidence that there are glitches out there. You have to make sure that you take the approach to do that in the long term so that not only does the country win in the long term, but as a party, you find a way to have a soft landing and still be a viable option for that independent voter when you start getting to 2014, 2016, 2018.
So, Bryce, from a progressive perspective, just one thing that, unless you can jump in whatever you like here, but I one thing that Lenny said I'd like you to kind of look at a minute is when the Democrats did have control, whether it was all or nothing or not, a lot of people on the progressive side that we always interview would say that even when they had a Democratic majority, that Barack Obama and the administration bent over backwards to try to not look like Democrats.
Yeah, I would say that it wasn't really all or nothing when they had a supermajority. I think President Obama, he campaigned a lot saying that he wanted to find the middle ground, the way to bring both sides of the aisle together. And I think he was telling the truth when he was doing that campaigning back in 2008. And what we saw was he came in and he said, okay, let's work together. I really think he wanted to work together. And what we saw pretty much right out of the gate was Republicans stand in lockstep against anything that he put forward. I mean, in the Affordable Care Act, the individual mandate was a conservative idea, and he took that and made it part of his reform, and now that's become a huge conservative talking point that that's such a terrible thing. I think what we've seen over his first term and now going into his second is this learning curve of figuring out, okay, Republicans really are not going to work with me. They are mostly interested in trying to make me fail. So how do I operate under those conditions? And I wish we had come to that realization earlier, because I do think that Democrats need to get on offense, need to figure out how to negotiate in a way that they don't just give up all their cards the second that Republicans start making threats, so that we can actually advance agendas. I feel like it's mostly been playing defense on the Democrat side and Republicans opposing anything on their side, and we're not really seeing anything getting done.
Mark, that's an interesting spin on what happened in 2009. This is the same president that met with Republicans, and one of the first phrases that came out of his mouth was, "I won." He didn't hire people that were post-partisan. He hired Rahm Emanuel to get his agenda done. He didn't get involved in the health care reform negotiations. He let Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Rahm Emanuel deal with that. And then he let the Democrats negotiate with each other when it came to what was going to be involved in this law and not include Republican ideas such as insurance portability and tort reform. Those are two big things Republicans were looking for. President Obama initially tried to see if he can get that interjected into the process. When the Democrats said, no, we have this, he stepped aside. Same thing when it came to the stimulus package, which never capped unemployment at 7.5%, or some of the other legislation that he initially passed. So now that we had this Tea Party revolution that came about in 2010. Now you see the president coming to the table a little bit more. Again, when he does actually get involved, we got stuff done. I go back to the lame duck session. Don't ask, don't tell was ended. The START Treaty was passed with about 70% of the vote in the Senate, and the tax cut extension happened. That all happened during a lame duck session with the same Democrats in office that were sitting there in the beginning of 2010 and in the end of 2009 when he refused to talk to Republicans. So, unfortunately, you see this president that is very, in essence, reactive to negotiating with Republicans rather than being proactive. If he were proactive, I would dare say if the Democrats and President Obama were proactive in dealing with the Republicans, you probably would not have had the Tea Party results electorally in 2010 because that momentum would not have been able to crest this high. But now we're dealing with the aftermath of a president that reacts and isn't proactive and Republicans that have gone a little too far from time to time.
Bryce?
I think that that's a different telling. I mean, we've seen a lot of the governing by crisis, right, since 2010, since the Tea Party Republicans sort of came to power, where, you know, we have the fiscal cliff or we have a government shutdown or a debt ceiling looming, and that's when, you know, all this frenzy of activity happens. And more often than not, what we see from President Obama is saying, okay, here's what I'll give you. I'll give you entitlement reform. He's floated change CPI, which is a change to how we calculate Social Security benefits, or raising the retirement age, or, you know, talking about tax reform. We've seen a lot of this talk on his side, and when Republicans have the chance to take him up on it, they still stand in opposition and they don't end up getting some of the things that I think that they would probably want, because he makes this initial offer and they strike it down because it's the first offer, which I think is just bad negotiating on both sides.
Well, this is I look forward to having you both back for a much longer conversation with some others because you're both really very cogent and clear about what you're saying. This is great. Bryce Covert is editor of the Roosevelt Institute's New Deal 2.0 blog. She writes regularly about women and the economy for the nation. We'll be linking to her work on our website, steinershow.org. And Lennon McAllister, who joins us very often, Republican strategist and former congressional candidate. You can see his work at lennonmcallister.com that we'll also link to. Bryce and Lenny, thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank
God bless you.
You
all, and thank you again, Mark.
And we're going to take a brief break. We're going to go out here with a little Edith Piaf. Today is the day that she passed away, the anniversary of that. And we're going out with La Vie en Rose. She just has a voice like silk. And we'll be right back as we look at what's going on in the Supreme Court, then talk to Mayor Stephanie Rawlings-Blake, 410-319-8888. Join us. Don't go away.